Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome back to another episode. Today we are going to be binging on all things binge eating. We will be doing our awesome new segment, The Fast and the Curious, on the hysteria around the coronavirus. And we answer your questions on tips how to stop binge eating and how to break the cycle of binge eating.
Hey guys, just a warning, this episode discusses binge eating and disordered eating behaviors. If this is a trigger for you in any way, we strongly suggest that you skip this episode. Hello everybody, welcome back to another episode. I am Kat, I am a registered psychologist.
And I'm Amy, a registered psychotherapist. And together, we are the Psychology Sisters.
Coming up with a name for our podcast was so incredibly hard. Anyway, here we are now.
And we chose the psychology.
I know. We're going to have another rebrand. Today we are talking all things binge eating. It is certainly something that Amy and I are no strangers to. But before we get into binge eating, Amy, tell me about your pit and peak of the week.
Okay, so my peak of the week would be that I have managed to stick to my budget.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
Yes. So if you listen to our new year, new me, as in question, episode, my tiny weeny little New Year's resolution was just to be more frugal. I set myself some really small manageable goals that I have been able to stick to, and I'm feeling so proud of myself because let me tell you, I'm pretty shit with money and saving is not my forte. So the fact that I have been able to stick to this budget and save money, I have the most in my savings account that I've ever had in my adult life.
Girl, congratulations. Yeah,
From saving.
Yeah.
As in not from just like getting like a big pay or something like that. From actual saving. I've saved the most I ever have in my adult life.
How does it feel?
I feel really proud of myself. Yeah, I feel really, really good. And that reward is motivating me to keep going.
Yay. Yeah, well done.
Yeah, so I treated myself by buying within my budget a new little top and some things for myself. Oh. And it felt really good knowing that I didn't have to feel guilty about that purchase. It was something that I had budgeted for. So
yay.
Super proud. That's my peak. And my pit is that... That's my pit.
I love financial freedom on you.
I know.
Love that for you.
Looks good, doesn't it? Looks great. This is actually a recycled outfit. Well done, me. Pit. I don't know that I have a pit. I have to think about it and get back to you. What are yours?
Okay. I have another embarrassing story. I had a few last year of really embarrassing stories, and surprisingly, nothing's happened. So it was my third day at my new job. And I generally don't tend to spend much money on work clothes. I hate spending money on work clothes because I should spend more money because it's the thing I wear the most, but I just don't love it. Anyway, so I buy these really cheap shoes from Kmart and like they're like $5, but I was like, bargain, like here I am sticking to my budget. Anyway, so I'd worn them twice and I was seeing my first client of my new job. So obviously I was trying to make a good impression and I was trying to dress up and look really professional. And I was literally on my way to see her. Like I just gotten out of the car. I was meeting her somewhere. I was meeting her at a cafe and my shoe literally broke. Like the straps, it was like a ballet flat situation and I wrap around the ankle straps.
Oh, the ones you're talking about.
They broke.
They're quite nice shoes.
Yeah, they fully broke. Oh. The strap broke and I couldn't even fix it. Like
the audacity
of my ballet slip. My $5. Did not expect that from you.
It's one of those we always talk about. Oh, mild inconveniences, God. Don't we?
Mild inconveniences are the worst.
They really sting the most, don't they?
Because it's not enough to get a lot of empathy, but no. It's still a lot to be like, it was so annoying. So yeah. I literally duck walked into this cafe with one shoe literally broken. And I felt so sorry for my client. She was probably like, who is this idiot?
Who needs a therapy more? Me or you?
Me. I was like, excuse me while I go and just help myself. So yeah, that was tough. But obviously in the grand scheme of things, it's not that bad. But man, it always happens to me at the worst times.
When you start jobs, embarrassing things happen
to
you.
Dude, right?
Blood in shoe.
I don't want to talk about it. So that would be my pit.
What's your peak?
My peak would be, I was thinking about this on the drive over here today, was that I have just had a really good few weeks with my Joshy. I don't really talk about Josh much on here, but he always is like, can you tell people who I am? Because it feels like he doesn't exist. I do have a fiance called Josh. Yesterday, it was obviously Valentine's Day. Well, we were recording. It was yesterday. And we just had a really nice night. We've settled into our new house really nicely. We're kind of, I feel like I'm nesting. Do you know what nesting means? It means like to just, I didn't know what that meant. So it's kinda just
like making it a home.
Just settling into our home and making it really nice. So we had a really nice night yesterday, and on tomorrow actually, while we're recording, it is our engagement anniversary. So it's just been a weekend full of just a bit of love, like just a reminder of, you know, love and so romantic sweet. Relationships. It's really corny, and I'm also very emotional, so it's probably because I'm very hypervigilant to like love and affection. But yeah, it's just, I've just had a really good past few weeks with my Joshy.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Love Joshy.
Love Joshy.
Love you guys.
We love you, spaghetti hair.
So to jump into this episode, we are talking all things binge eating. And I thought I would start off by mentioning some ballistic statistics. We hope to blow your mind with some crazy figures that really make you go, what the fuck?
Okay, I just need to preface this. When Ames and I were talking about new segments, I had like, I thought I was so funny. So obviously, if you can't tell, Ames and I are really lame. Like, we're not quick-witted. Like,
what
do you in mean? Terms of,
we're not lame.
We're very lame. We love puns, right? Puns is the lowest form of humor. I hope you know that. Anyway, that's
whoever said that is shit at puns.
For sure, it's Shakespeare. Yeah, I know, right? Only the best wordsmith of our time.
I know.
Anyway, yeah, so I was like, I called Amy on my way home from work, and I was like, okay, I've got the best idea. I was like, are you sitting down? Are you ready for this? What about ballistic statistics? And Amy was absolutely lovely. I think you were like,
I was thrilled. I was like, fuck yeah, statistics. And then you made a pun out of it. And then I was like, and we get to give sciencey facts. Oh my God. And then I came out with a counter idea that is now scrapped because we don't have time on our podcast. But I was like, and then we could have a segment.
Freud. Oh God. As I said, we're really bad puns.
I was like, I made a counter idea where I was like, we could have a segment where we talk about science-based stuff, and we could call it Getting Down and Nerdy instead of Getting Down and Dirty. Anyway.
Oh God.
So I thought I would bamboozle you with some ballistic statistics. Are you ready, Kat?
I'm sorry. I can just hear people shaking their heads.
I know,
they hear this.
Skip this.
Anyway, for the remaining nerds.
I feel like we've hyped it way too much now. So
it's terrible.
Don't set your expectations too high, but eating disorders and distorted eating together are estimated to affect over 16% of the Australian population. Binge eating disorder, otherwise known as BED or BED, being the most common. Among adolescents, approximately 88% of individuals with bulimia nervosa, 84% of individuals with binge eating disorder, and 55% of individuals with anorexia nervosa have one or more comorbid psychiatric conditions at some point in their lives. In other words, they're usually suffering from another mental health condition. Recent studies indicate overweight individuals are at an increased risk of distorted eating and eating disorders, particularly binge eating disorder, while individuals who use unhealthy weight control practices such as fasting, diet pills, purging are at increased risk of overweight obesity. So now that we have bamboozled you with some ballistic statistics, let's dive deep into today's episode.
Very excited to share that, weren't you?
I was.
Her face was literally lighting up with every new fact. Okay, what is binge eating, Amy?
Binge eating can be confused with overeating, and I feel overeating is a normal tendency for most individuals, especially when you have like something that you're celebrating, whether it be a birthday, a holiday, something like that. We can tend
Friday
to eat.
Night.
Yeah, Friday night. We can tend to eat beyond satiety. But I think the most important thing to recognize when it comes to binge eating is a loss of control, and it's that intense urge. So it's often accompanied by feelings of guilt, disgust, and depression following the binge episode. And that's not to say that if you experience that, you have binge eating disorder. But I think the distinction between binge eating and overeating is that the binge eating is accompanied by
feelings,
negative emotions,
guilt. When you overeat, it's like, oh man, I just ate too much. But there's not much guilt or shame. But I think when you're binge eating, it is accompanied. It's also accompanied by that feeling of feeling out of control.
Yeah. Yep.
I know when I used to binge, and I still do sometimes, it was like something came over me and I couldn't stop eating.
it's almost like it's an urge, isn't it? It's a really, it's like a wave that comes over you and it's like, I have to eat now.
Yeah. And I feel like binge eating is, for every experience I've had with a client who has it, it's actually quite common. And I would say that a lot of my friends that I've talked to, a lot of clients I've had do engage in binge eating and may not see it as a disorder. I don't want this to scare you guys, but I think obviously knowledge is, no, more knowledge is better than no knowledge, but it is extremely, extremely common. I find that binge eating disorders, it's actually a secondary behavior to a primary emotion. So whether that be shame, low self-esteem, self-loathing, stress, I binge when I'm stressed, anxious. Other times binge eating is a secondary behavior to the primitive instinct of just being hungry and restricting and not letting yourself have any food and then just going AWOL and eating all the food that you can. And binge eating is very, very common among dieters who restrict and restrict and restrict.
That's often what we say when working with clients is how it starts. A client will go on a very restrictive diet and that will often lead to unhealthy eating behaviors and habits, and that will usually result in binge eating.
And it can stem from childhood, you know, anxious attachments, rejection, not feeling good enough. It can stem from comments from other people, from your caregivers, from friends, from partners. It can stem from comparison to social media. It can really just stem from any feeling of not being good enough and wanting to change yourself or punish yourself. I think that's really important to remember with binge eating.
Definitely. And I think going back to what you just said about attachment, I do love attachment. We know that at the core of healthy development is where we, you know, really develop that secure attachment. And that is based on the bond we have with our primary caregiver and our experience as a child. So if we don't have healthy bonds with how we relate to the world, I think what people often forget is that we do have a real emotional relationship with food. And like you were saying, if we have an anxious attachment style, that can often translate to an unhealthy obsession with our body image, working out, or it can mean a fixation on food and diet. And whether that means that we are obsessively restrictive over our diet as a means for control, or we really, you know, feel like a loss of control in our relationship with food. And that is where we can see things like binge eating.
Yeah. So really a disrupt to relationships early on can manifest into binge eating. And, you know, everyone presents differently with binge eating. I think also it can also, as you're saying, control. Control is a huge thing. With any eating disorder, to be honest, control is really a huge factor that underlies a lot of eating disorders. You know, you might feel, I've certainly experienced this. I had about 3 or 4 clients last year that were working through binge eating, and they felt so out of control in their life that they were eating was the only thing that they had control over, and not eating was either a punishment or a control mechanism. And I think that was really interesting. And I think when I've certainly binged, it has been a, you know, feeling of control. It's the one thing I have control over my life. And that in some small way makes you feel better. But in the long run, it's obviously, it actually makes you feel a lot worse on the binge eating.
So my experience with binge eating is actually that I've had a loss of control when I binge. Is that it's almost like, oh, I lost willpower because I let myself eat that food.
But like I'm saying the restriction is the, it's the punishment, it's the control, it's the...
So you're talking about the cycle of restrict then binge.
Yeah. So the restricting, sorry, I didn't make that clear. And then the binging, it's where your primitive instincts kick in and are like, girl, we are hungry. You have not fed us. We are starving. And I think that's where a lot of the punishment, we feel bad after it, we feel shameful. And I know feeling after you have a binge, it's what the fuck? Like,
why did I do that?
I'm so dumb. I'm so stupid. I can't believe I let myself eat all that food. What the fuck? It's embarrassment of how much food you've eaten. Yeah. If you live with someone else, it's like, oh my God, are they going to notice? Yeah, it's really shameful. You beat yourself up and then you start to hate your body. It's like, how could you let me eat so much food?
You automatically see yourself as bigger and fatter.
Yeah.
Even though you logically and rationally have not changed from one meal, like you might be a bit bloated, you might have a full stomach, obviously you've just inhaled all the food, but you haven't changed. And I think that is one thing to highlight here, is how body image is so negatively affected by binge eating, because when we have such an obsession and there's so many heightened emotions around binge eating and how you feel so negative afterwards, you do start to see your body completely different after a binge.
Absolutely. Even though not really anything has changed. Even though not really changed. Yeah.
Like you might see yourself as enormous afterwards.
Mm. And I think that's where that self-punishment. And like you failed. Yeah. The so hatred. It's like, quick,
I need to get it back. I need to, you know, make up for all the food.
I remember hating my body. I remember when I was, it really affected me in high school. I was quite a big binge eater. I restrict, and then binge a lot. I remember this one time you just find anything in the house. Obviously I was starving myself. So obviously that was the biggest mistake, but obviously at that time I wasn't self-aware enough to know what I was doing. And I remember I used to live up on the in the mountains, so I used to have a running track and it was literally all uphill. I remember eating like crazy. I just got home from school and I hadn't eaten for like a day and a half or something ridiculous. And I just remember feeling so ashamed and so guilty that I punished myself. Mm. I made sure I ran up it was like an hour uphill. It was ridiculous. Like looking back, I'm like, oh my God. And I remember being in physical pain running up this hill because I was so full from all the food I've eaten, but it was almost like, no, you did this to me, so I'm going to punish you and run an hour up this hill. And I was so sick. Like I remember my body was like, stop, we need to just digest this food and then we can run. But it was just, I remember being so angry at my body. It was like an out of body experience. I was like, you fucked me up, I'm going to punish you back. And it was the most unhealthy relationship I've ever had, especially that stage in my life with my body, because I was almost angry at my body, even though it was me that was restricting. I was angry that I got hungry, which sounds crazy to anyone that hasn't experienced this binge eating, but it's so common to feel like that, to be angry at yourself.
I guess that's the one thing you don't have control of is those hunger cues.
Well, the instincts. Mm. We don't have control over our instincts because and those primitive urges. Right,
they're instincts.
Exactly. So talking about evolutionary hypothesis for binge eating, we do have the biological urges to eat. In fact, binge eating was actually quite common amongst our early ancestors. We would often go days without food and then, you know, catch animals, feast on animals, and then only eat like berries, the plants, the veggies, the fruits in between. When we deprive ourselves of food, our stress hormone increases, our metabolism slows, and we are more likely to store fat because our body is trying to conserve energy because it's unsure when the next meal will be. Ironically, this ends up with us often gaining weight. Also, when we're hungry, our prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for decision making and our willpower, obviously this weakens because when we're hungry, our brain's energy goes towards finding food. You know, you're not going to be switched on and attentive and concentrating. You know, when you're hungry and you're trying to work and you just cannot, your brain is literally turning everything off and it's saying metabolism slowing, your pre-productive slows as well, your reproductive systems. It's literally saying we need to go and find food. That's why when we're hungry, the smell of food is so enticing, because our brain is searching for that food. So when we do eventually give into food, our brain's reward system is lighting up. It's like a poker machine. It's like, yes, we found food. Yum, 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 yum. And that's what gives us the out of control feeling, because what's happening is your brain is like, oh my God, we finally found food. We need to eat as much as we can because we're not sure when our next meal is going to be. So when we're in that starvation mode, our brain feels unsafe and it feels like we don't know when the next meal is coming. So we're going to make sure we eat as much food as we can, store it all up for fat. So if we need it, if there's another few days without a meal, we have energy to keep going. And we do tend to consume more than normal because, you know, as I said, our body is just trying to, our brain is like, let's just eat all the food that we can. And ironically, again, this can cause weight gain, which is, you know, for some people who do partake in binge eating or the restriction, they're actually trying to lose weight. So binge eating, it's got a lot of bad stuff going on with it, but it can, and I think binge eating, no one ever goes into dieting and thinks, I can't wait to binge eat. It's something that just happens.
Definitely. So like you were saying, the part of our brain, which we call our primitive brain or our reptilian brain or our lizard brain. I did put up a little Instagram post about our lizard brain. So it works on our survival drives. So our reptilian brains are under attack by the enormous force that is the fast food industry, which targets these primitive instinctual, I guess, urges, because the concentrations of sugar, starch, fat, oil, salt, and those excitotoxins, which hit our bliss point. Now, our bliss point is the It's a scientifical kind of concoction, scientific concoction. And it's like the perfect balance between salty and sweet that actually inhibits the part of our brain that tells us we're satiated. So think of like chips, chocolate, sugary junk fast food that has that perfect balance of salty sweet. Our brain doesn't actually recognize that we're full. And our lizard brain, so that primitive part of our brain, doesn't have access to our prefrontal cortex, so our thinking, rational, logic, reasoning. It only has access to our fight or flight mechanisms, which can convince us that we need these things as a matter of survival, right? So our brain is governed by the promise of reward, and it contains our association centers with automatic conditioned responses. Think of Pavlov with the little dog and the ringing bell and the salivation. It's not that different to the response you have when, say, you associate the couch with chocolate or watching a movie with popcorn. So think of like when you're shopping for food or watching TV, our primitive brain lights up like a Christmas tree and sends us a stress response for you to grab all the things that it knows rewards us and makes us feel good. So your compulsion then comes in, and the compulsion overtakes your brain and shuts down the rational reasoning that might be you want to lose 5 kilos or it doesn't align with the forbidden foods in your diet. And that is why sometimes, and I know this has happened to me, I've been thinking, no, Amy, you don't want the chocolate, you don't need the chocolate. And then all of a sudden I have chocolate. And I'm like, how the crap did that happen?
Well, the more you restrict, the more whatever you're restricting is front of mind.
Yeah.
It's literally like reverse psychology.
Yeah. So that's why sometimes it can be helpful to remember that a craving is not an emergency, but it feels like it.
Mm.
It feels like I need this thing now. Oh my God, my cravings are through the roof. I must eat this now. But it's not an emergency. You're not going to die. And I think this is where it becomes conflicting between, and I've had so many conversations with people about this, in like the health and fitness industry, from a psychological perspective, it's, do you give in to a craving or do you exercise, in quotation marks, willpower? And I think that's what people struggle with so much. And it's that, whoa, if I give in to this craving, am I going to lose control and binge? Because I can't possibly just stop with having, you know, one little cube of chocolate. It's better just to have none. And then that's, am I being too over-restrictive? And that's why I have the craving in the first place. And I think that is a real mind fuck when we talk about binge eating and the underpinnings of binge eating.
And I think also when you're on a healthy diet journey, or you're trying to change the foods that you eat, I think that with any diet, there will be some restriction in the foods that you eat or how much you eat. And I think that we tend to think, okay, well, I'm really craving chocolate, but I'm going to have this healthy alternative instead. And you eat the muesli bar and you think,
wasn't as satisfying.
So maybe I'll just have an apple. Oh no, I'm not really feeling full. Okay, well, YOLO, I'm just going to have a little packet of chips. That should be fine. And then when you finish eating all of that, you get to it and you have the chocolate that you were craving anyway. So you think, oh, well, I had it anyway. So it is a real mind fuck.
So some of the more common signs and symptoms of binge eating disorder, when we talk about binge eating disorder, we are actually talking about the diagnostic criteria for binge eating disorder. So recurrent episodes of binge eating. An episode of binge eating is characterized by both eating in a discrete period of time, that's usually within 2 hours, an amount of food that is definitely larger than most people would eat in a similar period of time under similar circumstances, a sense of lack of control over eating during the episode. So you might feel like you can't stop eating no matter how physically uncomfortable you are. And binge eating episodes are associated with 3 or more of the following: eating too much more rapidly than normal, eating until feeling uncomfortably full, eating large amounts of food when not feeling physically hungry, eating alone because of feelings of embarrassment, feeling disgusted with oneself, depressed or very guilty afterwards. Marked distress regarding binge eating is present. The binge eating occurs on average at least once a week for 3 months. The binge eating is not associated with the reoccurrent use of inappropriate compensatory behavior, for example, purging. So that's not associated with binge eating disorder. That's more when we talk about binge purge, that's more bulimia nervosa. So some common signs and symptoms of binge eating that may not be associated with the disorder as such is that overwhelming sense of lack of control and eating more rapidly than normal. And I guess eating when you're not physically hungry and eating past the point of physical comfortability.
And we do have some severity grades here. So I hope this doesn't make me people nervous talking about the severity. But so according to the DSM-5, a mild severity of binge eating disorder or BED is 1 to 3 episodes per week. So 1 to 3 binges per week. Moderate is 4 to 7 episodes per week. Severe is 8 to 13 episodes per week. And extreme is more than 14 episodes per week. So that's like twice a day. So there is certainly different gradings and levels there. If you think that you do fit into this criteria, we definitely urge you to go and speak to someone. Nothing is wrong with you. It just means that maybe you need some support, because binge eating is such a vicious cycle that's so easy to get stuck in this cycle. And it feels like it's never ending. You might go really well at your diet or whatever it is you're doing, and think, yep, I feel really good. I'm feeling really on top of it. But then it's like, you eat, you binge, and you feel like such a failure and you have to start all over again. And I remember when I was restricting so much, I felt like a ticking time bomb. I felt like, okay, I'm really good at restricting, I'm really good at exercising, but you know, it's only a matter of time before I binge again. And that's a really awful place to be stuck for such a long amount of time. So please know that if you do experience this, you're not alone. But I certainly think that talking to people about it can really, really help in this situation.
One topic I did want to just discuss quickly with you, Katniss, is binge eating and your period. Have you noticed that you tend to eat more or crave certain foods around your period?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we burn like 30% more calories, right?
Did I make
that up?
I think I just made that up
to justify eating more food.
Yeah, but no, it is a thing, and it's got to do more so with our hormones. So research suggests that changes in the levels of hormones, estrogen and progesterone, cause cravings for food rich in carbohydrates. So it's not surprising that we do look for those sugary, like carbohydrate foods like chocolate. And carbs and sweet foods may also help that low mood and fatigue that often occurs in the lead up to the onset of a period, because as we know, sugar gives us that really temporary high and makes us feel really good for a short amount of time. Sugars and starches both cause the body to release serotonin, which is the chemical that increases feelings of happiness. Also, eating regularly helps stabilize blood sugar levels, which can keep mood steady. So it does kind of make sense that we tend to go through little overeating episodes in the lead up to our period and around, I guess, our menstrual cycle.
Yeah, and around our menstrual cycle, we do tend to eat more, but just because we eat more doesn't automatically lead to binge eating. Just because we're eating more than usual, that does not automatically mean we're binge eating. It just means that it's a natural reaction to our body.
Definitely. And the reason I wanted to touch on this is because I was talking to a couple of girlfriends when I was kind of discussing that we were going to do an episode on binge eating, because it is such a popular topic of conversation. And they said that the words they used were, I always binge eat around my period, or I always tend to binge in the week that I get my period.
Do you ever feel like when you're on your period, nothing you eat satisfies you?
Yeah.
You just feel like a bottomless pit and you need to eat everything. And I'm sure, I haven't researched it, but I'm sure there is some biological explanation to that. Maybe increase in fat means a healthier baby, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, definitely. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so completely normal if it's around your period and you do eat a little bit more. So what are some practical tips, Ames, for supporting yourself with binge eating or someone that you know, and, you know, eventually, hopefully, overcoming binge eating?
I think first and foremost, like you just said, being kind to yourself, knowing that you're not a failure, that this is not that you haven't failed your diet. The restrictive diet has failed you. And I think that's the first and foremost thing to address, is that is your diet so restrictive that it's causing you to have this really negative relationship with food to the point where you're binge eating and developing like distorted thoughts around food and that kind of thing. So ditching the diet is probably where I would start, but also becoming really self-aware of how you feel in the lead up to a binge and before you binge, I think is another really good place to start. So if you find yourself becoming really distressed in situations around, to say you're going out for dinner with friends and you're feeling really anxious and stressed because you're scared you're going to overeat or you're going to binge, or you are counting down the seconds to when you can get home and overeat in secret, I think that's something that really needs to be addressed first.
Yeah, so looking at firstly the emotional triggers. So what is it that triggers you to binge? I think that's really important to become really self-aware. So for example, it could be stress. You might be stressed at work. You could be an anxious person, or something could have happened that has made you anxious. You could be going through some relationship problems, some friendship problems. You could feel like you've got no control over your life. I know for me it was always stress. I always stress binged. For me that was my emotional trigger. That is quite common for a lot of people, but it could be any stress in your life. It could also be boredom. So we've got emotional triggers, and that's not limited, that list. It could be any emotional trigger. And then we've also got our environmental triggers. Now, these are really, really important to take note of. So an environmental trigger is something around us that triggers these unhelpful thinking styles and the need to feel like you need to restrict and then binge. So for example, it could be in the change room trying on bikinis. It could be at the beach, could be with friends, could be looking at social media. And I think that's really important to note, because these are the certain environments that will trigger us to think that we're not good enough, or that we need to be smaller, or we need to fit some kind of idealized body type. And so that can cause us to feel like, okay, I need to restrict myself because I don't look like the girl in the magazine. I don't know if people read magazines still, but I don't look like the girl on Instagram. I don't look like the girl in this bikini. I look so different in this. And then what happens is we restrict, and then we'll eventually binge again. So, you know, there's triggers at different times of the restricting and the binging. But I think environmental triggers can, you know, start the restriction phase, and then the emotional triggers are the thing that can trigger the binging phase. So those two things are really important to take note of before your binge. What's happened leading up to it?
Definitely.
So after you look at your triggers, as Amy was saying, you need to be kind to yourself. So keeping a diary can really help as well, or just the notes on your phone. I would always recommend, because I find a lot of binging is due to hunger. It's just your body being hungry and reaching out for food. It's just doing its job. I would always say to people who are binging is to free yourself of any restriction in your diet, even though that sounds incredibly scary and you feel like you're losing a lot of control. I think it's really important to allow yourself to eat whatever you want when you want for a couple of weeks. And that is very scary to someone who's been restricting, controlling their calories for so long. But what this does, because your body's in that constant fight or flight, it's in starvation, it's wondering when it's going to get its next meal. There might be some, you know, might have slowed your metabolism down because it's, you know, your body's just trying to protect you. So by eating food when you're hungry and when you're have cravings, this actually signals to your body that you're not starving and food is accessible at any time. And this means that your body relaxes and isn't constantly searching for food and thinking about food. When you don't have something, you think about it more often. I know when, you know, I was restricting, I thought about food all the time because I was so hungry. so eventually if you allow yourself to eat whatever you want, whenever you want, you will start to naturally crave healthy foods. You know, after you go on a holiday, and I think this happened to you in Europe, Ames, and you eating, like, I know this happened to me in every single holiday I've been on, but it's like you eat pasta and you eat chocolate and all that stuff. And then after you come back, you're like, oh, I just want healthy food. Like, I just want fruit. I want vegetables. So your body does have its own set point. But I think when we diet, we forget to look at our body for cues, but we look at other people's diets for cues. So really tuning into what your body is craving. I think that could be a really, really good way to start to listen in and tune into your body again.
Yeah, definitely. And not skipping meals either, like fasting as a way of making up for over-consuming calories. It's important to have regular meals because we have a hunger hormone called ghrelin that sends signals to our brain telling us that we're hungry. And when we skip meals, obviously that hunger hormone is activated. And that is what produces those incredibly uncontrollable urges to binge, or those really, really consuming cravings that we get. So by, you know, not skipping meals and not worrying about, you know, I won't eat during the day because I'm going out for dinner, like I'll save my calories, by having regular, nutritionally balanced meals, that's going to balance all our hunger hormones, and we are going to have less of those, I guess, impulsive cravings that we feel like we can't control and we need to eat food now. So that's another tip I would recommend, is don't skip meals. And if you feel like eating whatever you want is too scary, like Kat said, I think rather than focusing on caloric density, focus on what the food is doing for you. So for example, if you're someone that is wanting to be healthier, or is wanting to live a healthier lifestyle, and that's maybe why you started the diet, still eat in a way that aligns to your values and what's important to you by knowing what you're putting into your body. And that might alleviate some of the anxiety about eating regularly and, you know, maybe consuming a little bit more food than what you have been on a regular basis to have a more maintainable and sustained healthy relationship with food. So knowing that you have maybe, you know, some avocado, which is healthy fats and omegas, that's really good for your hair, skin and nails, and you know, you've got a portion of protein on there that's really good for muscle recovery and overall health, and you might have some veggies that are really high in micronutrients, vitamins and minerals and that kind of thing. So therefore, even though you're eating regular meals and you might have a bigger plate of food, you know that that's going towards an overall goal of having a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah, and also if you're someone who's trying to overcome binge eating and to stop, I guess, reduce the episodes of binge eating, is plan ahead. I mean, I know when I haven't eaten all day, or I miss lunch because I'm on the road, or I'm just too busy, I come home and I'm like, give me all the food in the fridge in my mouth. So planning ahead is so important, because as Ames was saying, it keeps all of your body's chemicals stable, keeps your blood sugar normal, and it helps to make us not want to come home and eat every single thing in the fridge. So please plan ahead, take your food with you, have some snacks. I always keep just something in the car in case I'm ever in the car and I've just forgot to eat something.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. And also, when you do sit down and have a meal or a snack, mindful eating. Don't eat while you're watching TV if you do struggle with binge eating, or don't eat and scroll through your phone mindlessly. Really be present when you're eating your food. Focus on how it tastes and how it feels and the different flavors, and really pay attention and be mindful of that satiation point. So notice when you start to feel like you're satisfied versus when you feel, you know, maybe a little bit too full and that kind of thing. And that mindful eating, the slowing down of the actual process of consuming your food, can be really effective in, one, slowing down how fast you eat, therefore consuming less, because you're actually paying attention to when you feel satiated. And two, it really kind of gets rid of that emergency and that, you know, urgency to finish all the food, as much food in the shortest amount of possible, in the shortest amount of time possible.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes another trigger as well that just popped into my mind is being alone, because I feel like when you're alone, when you're alone, there's no judgment. And I think with binge eating as well, well, any eating sometimes, is that we tend to eat more when there's not as many people around us and when we're alone, because we're not vulnerable to judgment around us. Even though nobody should judge you for what you're eating, sometimes it does happen. But I think that was just another trigger, is being alone in your own company and not having that.
I've noticed that since recently living alone. And I remember telling you, like, since my housemates moved out, I remember the first week she was gone, it was around Christmas time, and I got all these chocolate hampers. There was no one here to judge me how much I was eating. I went ham on that chocolate. I was like, oh, that was bad.
Because there's no one.
There's no judgment. You can just be as disgusting as you want to be.
Yeah.
You know, eating a whole hamper of chocolate to yourself is disgusting, but definitely didn't feel great afterwards.
Yeah. So binge eating is really interesting. Another, I guess, obviously self-talk and, you know, it depends on the root of your binge eating. It's really hard to have a one strategy fits all. It really depends on where your binge eating is coming from, whether it's from self-loathing, whether it's from that you're just starting a new diet and it's not working for you, whether it's from a childhood attachment. It really,
or whether it's just like I was discussing before, your lizard brain, whether it's just you see a stimulus that you associate with a reward, thus you get this almost like a reflex, like instinctual craving or urgency for the reward or the food you have in association to that object. In which case it's about waking yourself up, waking your conscious thinking brain up and making the decision of, oh, well, I'm not actually hungry right now. I don't actually want to eat that right now. And being a little bit uncomfortable while that craving's there.
Yeah.
And then it will surpass. I think that kind of binge eating is very different to emotional binge eating.
Yeah. So, you know, as we said, there's a few different roots of the cause of binge eating. But if one of the causes of binge eating is a restriction, it's a trying to lose weight kind of thing, like going on different diets, I think what's really interesting is to look inwards. So look at yourself, your self-talk, look at how you talk to your body. And one thing I will always say to clients is, has hating your body, has that been working for you? What has this achieved? Are you happy with yourself? Because I can probably guarantee that 10 out of 10 people who are binge eating are not happy with themselves, especially if it's more for a weight loss thing or it's a physique thing. So has hating your body worked? You know, is that working for you? If it's not working, could you do something differently? Could you change the way you talk about yourself and just give it a try? Just experiment for a week and see how it feels. I think also it's good to, if it's a control thing, it's good to find control elsewhere. So, for example, if you find control in manipulating your food intake and exercising or anything like that, and that leads to binging, is there somewhere else that you can find control in your life? Can you take up a new hobby? Can you step up a little bit more at work? I think it's really, you know, looking at the cause and seeing how we can replace it.
Or if it's stress, what other stress management strategies can you use? How can you work on managing your stress in a way that doesn't involve food?
Yeah. Yeah. And food is comforting. So looking back at what else is comforting for you, it could be a nice hot bath. It could be going to the gym, sauna. Sauna's good. So finding the, I guess behind every behavior is a motivation, and just replacing that behavior and something else can be really helpful. Also, just want to end, it is not your job. If it is more of like a beauty thing, like an attraction thing, it's not your job to be beautiful and attractive. That's not why people are put on earth. It's not people's job to look beautiful and to fit a physique all the time.
Yeah, you were put on this earth to do more than lose weight.
Exactly, exactly. And I think also if clothes don't fit you, they've failed you. You haven't failed them.
But you don't need to shrink to fit into your clothes. Yeah. Like, you just need to buy
a different size
that fits you.
And that's okay.
And there's no right size. Like, there are so many different body shapes and sizes. Just because you're not an 8 or a 10 doesn't mean you're fat. Yeah. Doesn't mean that you need to lose weight. Doesn't mean that you need to change your body to fit into an 8 or 10. That size doesn't fit your body. So you need to find a size that fits your body.
I remember when I was shopping and I, you know, was always trying to get into a size 8 or a size 10. And, you know, that for me was success. And I just remember one day, I think it was when I was living with you, Ames, and I bought like a size, you know, I'd obviously talked myself into that mindset by that stage, but I remember I bought like a size 14 because I like stuff baggy. And I just bought all these different sizes because it just depends on what's comfortable for me. And I remember you came home one day and you said to me, oh, I think you must have said, oh, I bought a 8 instead of a 6. And I was like, who looks at the tag? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, do you remember that conversation we had?
I actually don't.
Yeah, you were really upset because you were like, oh, I didn't fit into a size 6 in this store.
Yeah.
I bought a size 8. And I remember being like, but who notices? Who that looks at the
really,
tag?
That was a really big thing with me. I think our relationship with food journeys and relationship with our body journeys are very different because I was someone that was always really small and I didn't have to do a lot to stay small. I was always really naturally athletic and
tiny. You were tiny, tiny, teeny, tiny human.
I was a very small human. And then when I hit about, I'd say 23, 24, my body changed a lot and I started to, I guess develop more of a womanly figure. like more of an hourglass figure. Like I never used to have hips my body did. My body did change a lot and I really struggled with that. I found that super, super difficult because, again, I was never someone that really had to pay attention too much on what I ate or what I did. I was always like loved exercise and, you know, it was
love sports,
loved sport, really sporty, and that kind of thing. So it wasn't something that I was like, I need to go on a diet to lose weight or I need to do this exercise to lose weight. I was active because I enjoyed it. And then once I hit, you know, 23, 24, like I say, my body changed significantly and I started storing fat in places that I'd never had fat before. And yeah, my body just really changed. I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. And I think that's when my relationship with food also changed because it was like, okay, shit, like I don't feel comfortable. I don't like how my body looks. I'm not used to it. My clothes didn't fit me how they used to. And yeah, things like that for me were like, it was almost confronting.
Yeah. I think what was frustrating, like I remember you telling me, is like, you've done nothing differently. It's just puberty. It's not like you've started eating way more or you've exercised less. You literally didn't do anything differently. If anything, you started to take notice of your food more.
So I was like, I'm the healthiest I've ever been. I'm being more conscious of my body than I've ever been in my life. And I feel like it's going backwards. And that was a really difficult concept for me. And talking about it with other girls and even clients that I have, like I work with children, but even the clients that I work with that are going through puberty, I feel like that isn't something that's talked about enough. And it's how our body changes can have a real psychological impact, and feeling comfortable in your body is so important and accepting your body is so important. And I feel like that is not an easy thing to do, especially if it does kind of catch you off guard suddenly, like I felt like it did to me. Like just all of a sudden I had this new body that didn't feel like me, like didn't you. Feel like mine. And that was really difficult. And still now I even struggle a little bit when I look back on photos of what I used to look like versus how I like feel now. I think I just struggled with being bigger and feeling heavier because they are words that we associate negative connotations to, you know, as I think especially as women, men too. Like this is not just a thing women go through. I think men go through this too. But I think particularly with women, we are taught from a young age to be small and
feminine and petite.
And that's what beauty is. Yeah. Beauty is small. Beauty is losing weight. And I think I just struggled so much because with that, I guess, idea in my head, and being the age that I was, just felt like I was going backwards.
Yeah.
And that was a really shitty feeling.
Yeah. And I think also what's really interesting is binge eating disorder, it's more prevalent in adolescence. And adolescence is a time, as you're saying, where puberty takes control over your body. There's nothing you can do.
It's out of your control.
It's literally out of your control. And, you know, it's not just that, it's other stuff going on in your life. I mean, adolescents, teenagers, they're kind of at the age where they want to be independent, but they're not allowed to yet. They can't drive yet. They can't get their own job. They still have to go to school. So everything is still within the control of their caregivers, but they're at the age where they're insightful enough to know that, oh, I want to be more independent. So sometimes control is taken, or sometimes adolescents start to really want more control over their life, and sometimes they're in a position where they can't have much control over their life, and that's where manipulating eating can be the one thing that they can control. And I wonder if that feeds into why the prevalence of binge eating and any eating disorders is a lot higher in adolescents than it is most other age groups. And it certainly starts in adolescence as well. So yeah, it is certainly something that Ames and I still struggle with. We're flawed. We still...
We're human. We have our good days and our bad days. Yeah,
but I think, you know, just remembering that you are not put on this earth to be small and to be beautiful. I think be big and be brave and be bold. I think as much as it's easy to say, I think the more that you repeat that to yourself and the more that you surround yourself with people that don't care what you look like is so important. What has helped for you, Ames?
I think the number one thing for me, and it's a really practical tip, was to ensure that I'm not restricting myself with a stupid diet. Like I said, I didn't try and diet until like mid 20-ish. And I didn't struggle with binge eating until I tried really restrictive diets. So now I just make sure that I'm, and I still go through phases where I'm like, oh crap, like I feel I'm having a bit of a blah, you know, body image day. I'll, you know, go on a higher protein, low carb diet. And I really have to remind myself that that won't bring me long-term happiness. And just to keep doing what I'm doing, you know, have regular healthy meals, food that I really enjoy eating, and focus on how I feel rather than how I look.
Yeah.
I think that's been the biggest help in me. It really is just that conscious awareness of how you're feeling in that present when you're either just like in stress thinking like crap, whether there's an event coming up and you think, oh, I've got a crash diet for it so I look good. Reminding yourself that you know you don't have to crash diet to look good. You are fine as you are. And again, finding clothes that you feel comfortable and confident in, not clothes that you have to shrink to fit into. And doing things that practically help you. Like you said, plan your meals ahead of time. You know, set yourself up for success so that you feel in control and you feel confident, not so that you feel like, ah, shit, like, you know. Because at the end of the day, for me, I can only speak for myself, a lot of my binge eating behavior, when I look back at it, a lot of the time it has been a choice. Like I've made a decision to be like, well, I've had one chocolate bar, so I've fucked the whole day. So now I'm just going to decide to eat everything else. When I could have changed that mindset and been like, okay, I've had one chocolate bar. It's not the end of the world. I'll just keep going on with the rest of my day.
And that's a lot easier to do when you eat well. Do you know what I mean? Like it's a lot harder to say, oh, I'll just have one square of chocolate when you've been starving yourself all day. Of course you're going to eat three blocks of chocolate. Your body's literally starving. There's nothing wrong with you. Your body's trying to feed you to keep you alive. Yeah. Like props to your body.
What's your hot tip?
Oh, my hot tip. Well, I think, to be honest, I started to eat more and I started to be okay with trusting that eating more is not going to make me bigger. Even if it did make me bigger, that's okay. But eating more for me was the biggest thing and the best thing I've ever done for myself. I'm just speaking personally, but going on a diet that's full of carbs and full of fat and full of protein and not being scared about a certain food group.
That was huge for you.
That was huge, yeah. And I think like eventually, because I was always pretty
restrictive.
Full. Well, I was always, after I started eating more, I got pretty full because I was eating normal food like a normal person. And then I didn't crave anything. And then I got home and I wasn't like, oh, I need to eat everything because I'm starving. I was like, oh, yeah, like chocolate would be good. Like, awesome. And I was like, I always thought people who did that were crazy. I'm like, how do people just have like two lines of chocolate? Like, you know, like just who has two squares? I'm talking like two lines. And often that's, you know, not the case for me. But, you know, I always thought people, and I'd be like, how do they do that? Like, how do they have that amazing willpower? It's not willpower. It's just that I'm full. Yeah. That I've had other food that's filled me up and I'm not needing this chocolate.
You're satisfied.
I'm satisfied, yeah. And I think that for me, it's a very practical. And I think with that came the increased, you know, the better self-talk. And because I wasn't angry at my body anymore because I was like, oh, I'm the one that's been fucking up my body. Like it clicked and it's so silly. Like I'm a professional in this field and, you know, I'm an educated female and it only just clicked one day. And I was like, it's because my body's hungry and it's doing what it's supposed to do, which is get food. In the wild, this is what it's supposed to do to stay alive. Like it's just a biological response and it's not because I'm a failure. It's not because I'm an idiot or I'm weak or I've got no willpower. It's literally anyone in my situation would have the same response. And that's what I had to keep telling myself. So now I'm like, I'm sorry, body.
I love you. Yeah.
I put you through some
Thank
shit.
Thank you for putting up with my shit.
Oh, God. Yeah. So I think that that's more of a practical mindset. But please, please know if you're in the same boat, you're not alone.
It's lots more common than
And men as well.
Think.
Men certainly do experience this as well. So we do have some recommendations. Butterfly Foundation,
amazing.
Eating disorder. They are fantastic. You can call them. They've got online chat. You can put yourself in for a referral. Any psychologist or counsellor, especially ones specialising in eating disorders or binge eating, they are really good people to talk to as well. So please, please, please reach out for help. Or
if you feel like you're in the midst of a binge or you're about to binge, you can pick up the phone and call Lifeline or Beyond Blue. If you are someone that really, if it's more of a control, emotional control thing, maybe picking up the phone every time, you know, initially you feel the urge to binge, that can be another really great tip as well. Or pick up the phone and calling a friend just to distract you if it's something that you're really struggling with. Like, obviously the first step is to address those emotional triggers for the binge. But if something you can do, I guess, in the meantime as a distraction, another really good tip is to pick up the phone and either call a trusted friend or give Lifeline a call just to talk through some of those emotional triggers and what's going on for you, and it can just really help calm you down. Okay, so now is time for our follower questions. We did get a lot of questions on tips on how to stop binge eating, so hopefully we've covered some of those for you. Another question we got from a lovely follower is, how do you break the cycle of binge eating? So Kat, can you please tell us, how do you break the cycle
of binge eating? Well, this is very complex, and obviously we don't know your story, so we can't be personalized in our response, but I think a really good way to stop the cycle of binge eating is to do something you've never done before. So if you continue to restrict and then you continue to binge, obviously whatever you're doing, it's not working. Try something different, break the cycle and stop restricting in the first place. I think try that and see how that goes. Allowing yourself to eat whatever you want, whenever you want, giving yourself permission to. I know that does sound quite frightening, but eventually you'll start to tune into your body's natural cravings and hunger cues, and that will become what you abide by, not someone else's diet plan. So try something different than what you're doing now, and it's going to be scary, but you have to sit in that uncomfortableness and that nervousness for a couple of weeks and just try something different. I think that's the best way to break something, is to do something completely different. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think, like we always say, address the cause of this behavior. Like, there's always a cause to behavior. What is the underlying thing that I guess is perpetuating this cycle, whether it's emotional, habitual, if it's stress related, relationship related, what's causing this cycle?
Yeah.
And address that. Really do some, I guess, self-exploration around that.
Yeah.
And like we always say, recognizing the emotions and how you feel in the lead up to a binge might help. But yeah, I agree. What is the cycle? What can we change? What's not working? Because it's obvious. Something's obviously not working.
Yeah.
Alrighty, let's get into the fast and the curious. Yay! Kat, would you like to take it away?
So, I thought this was a super interesting one. I want to talk about coronavirus. Amy.
I'm here for it.
You're here for it. When I first heard it, you know why they called it the coronavirus?
Beer?
Yeah, because under a microscope, the cells look like a Corona beer with a little lime in it. Isn't that cool?
I love that.
Yeah. Thanks, Dr. Carl.
It's very creative.
So apart from being a very fun name, what is happening is with the coronavirus outbreak is mass hysteria, and there is mass panic, and also the racism resulting from the coronavirus outbreak. I think what's happening here is there is a big like mob mentality, and that's kind of when just because everyone else is saying something or doing something or feeling something, you need to feel that as well. So just because everyone's jumping off a cliff means like, oh, maybe I should jump off a cliff. Please don't do that. So just because everyone else is freaking out about the coronavirus, what we generally tend to do as humans is expect the worst. We think, oh my God, I'm going to get infected. I'm going to die. I need to stay in the house, or I don't want to be around.
Don't go near anyone that's from China.
Yeah, anyone who's, or don't buy products from China. So there's been this really indirect racism, and even direct, I've seen people on my Instagram make really derogatory comments about the Eastern Asian population. So someone had said, oh, I'm avoiding Asian looking people. When I see them on the street, I'm running away from them, or I'm not buying products from China. And I think that
even though you have every right to feel nervous and scared, I think what's happened is that there's been a total lack of facts. There's been a huge hysterical response. And obviously media is skewed to get your reaction and to get your attention and to get you kind of a little bit, to provoke an emotional reaction with you. So please remember your facts. So I think there's been a huge hysterical response for such a, for, it's almost been blown out of proportion, the coronavirus. It seems like this, obviously it's scary and, you know, it's the unknown as well. And when there's something unknown, we expect the worst. But I just kind of wanted to talk about the psychology behind hysteria and where it comes from. And probably it's not helpful in this situation.
Yeah, there's a lot of catastrophizing.
So much catastrophizing. Please do your research. If you're someone who is a little bit worried about coronavirus, please look at scientific pages. Please don't look at the Daily Mail. Oh, God. Because that'll make you think the worst. So just wanted to remind people to be really mindful.
Yeah, no, I think it's important to discuss topics like this when they are, you know, really catastrophized in the media, and especially because of the, like you said, the amount of casual and indirect racism associated with it. I think it's important to just discuss and maybe make everyone a little bit more aware that.
And just because your friend or people that you know on social media are freaking out doesn't mean you have to.
Yeah.
We generally tend to go in protection mode when we're nervous, like fight or flight's coming on. So it's like, oh my God. And obviously our higher order, you know, thinking that switches off. Okay. So in order to make sure that you're using your full brain in hysteria, please, please, please do your research.
Sometimes looking at some evidence and some facts can really help alleviate some of that nervous energy and that stress.
Yeah. So I just want to quickly touch on coronavirus because I've seen some incredibly racist comments and it's all a big people are really making a mountain out of a molehill. So just do your research, guys. We say it all the time.
Yes. Alrighty. That might be all we have time for today.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's been a big episode, but it's a big topic. We'll be back. We put this on Insta and we'll be doing a body positivity episode, which would be a nice kind of segue into this.
For anyone that did vote, binge eating, I think, was only had like 2 or 3 more votes than body positivity.
Quite
so
a
we
few
will.
People voted.
Yeah, we will be doing it. We will be doing body
Amy's
positivity
struggling
as well.
To say body positivity.
Bossy pov.
We will be certainly doing a body positivity glow up episode. Stay tuned for that. But we hope that you enjoy this episode. Please reach out for help if you need it.
Alrighty, bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If you want to see more, please follow us on Instagram at The Psychology Sisters. To make sure that you never miss another episode, please hit the subscribe button in the podcast app. If you know someone who might enjoy this episode, we would love you to share this with them. Please note the content shared in this episode is purely educational and does not replace personalized advice from a mental health professional. See you next week for more spicy science and sexy self-help.